Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Sie führen täglich hitzige Fußballdebatten? Dann probieren Sie jetzt die Big Mac-Methode. Denn nur beim Big Mac sind sich alle einig.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Die Big Mac-Methode schlichtet Diskussionen über Handspiel, Abseits, Videobeweis, Aufstellung, Taktik und Auswechslungen. Bei Ineffektivität wird keine Haftung übernommen.
Copper Bullets, the four-part series from Amazing Sports Stories, is available now.
Zambia was considered as an underdog.
Are we going to do the impossible here?
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Ashley, a UK-based journalist, producer and broadcaster, and in the past 10 years I've been affected personally by suicide. A close relative and a friend both took their own lives. My partner also attempted suicide twice. It's been a rollercoaster decade in which I've questioned regularly whether there was anything I could have done to prevent these tragedies, or whether, given the huge numbers of people taking their own lives worldwide, it's a much bigger picture issue and more about the societies we live in. I've joined campaigns aimed at encouraging people to watch out for signs someone might be contemplating suicide, and done my bit to help support my partner rebuild their life. But perhaps the biggest revelation for me has been finding out there are countries around the world where attempting suicide is treated as an offence with a threat of jail terms and fines and a criminal record. The World Health Organization, among others, says this makes their situation worse. Those people affected rarely talk about their experiences. They often daren't talk about their experiences. But in this programme, some of them have. You may find some of their accounts disturbing. I'm Ashley Byrne, and this is the documentary Suicide Silent Survivors from the BBC World Service. Anyone who's ever been close to someone who's attempted suicide knows there's often a complex web of emotions which can lead to someone getting so low that they want to take their own life. No story is the same, of course, but most people have a couple of things in common, and that's isolation and a deep feeling of hopelessness. I know from my own experience that talking to people who feel suicidal can often prevent them from going through with it. But of course, for people all over the world, in all societies, just talking about it can be a problem. Talking about their feelings in some countries where there's still widespread prejudice and stigma around mental health can be really hard. And then there's those countries where attempted suicide is actually a criminal offence. Talking about it then can be very difficult. Gabriel, not his real name, is from an area about 390 kilometres northwest of the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
I am a graduate of economics and mathematics. Unfortunately, I do not have a job right now.
We've changed Gabriel's name and his voice in case of reprisals. Gabriel, who has a diagnosis of the mental health condition bipolar, is trying to rebuild his life after attempting suicide nearly 2 years ago. His brother saved him at the last minute, but the initial repercussions for Gabriel were huge.
My parents took me to the police station. I was processed. I spent 3 nights on police cells. And then on Monday, I was taken to court and I was fined 50,000 Kenya shillings. It was horrible. Very intimidating.
The law in Kenya criminalises attempted suicide under Section 226 of the Penal Code. It is described by that code as a misdemeanour and punishable by a fine and or a jail term of up to 2 years. Gabriel suffered a lot of stigma in the days after his attempt and appearance in court. At one point, he was beaten up, and in the case of his family, at first they were angry about what he'd done.
I was arrested and released. My parents, they took me to my psychiatrist after that, and then the psychiatrist recommended that my parents get counselling by a psychologist. So they were counselled and now they are being supportive now.
So in terms of rebuilding your life and obviously trying to get work and things like that, how does now having a criminal record affect you?
In Kenya, once you are a criminal, you have that case put in your certificate of good conduct. So to get a job is very hard. When you apply for a job and they see that you have a criminal conduct, they do not consider you for a job. So it is very tough.
So what's your understanding then? Explain to me why you think some people feel that attempted suicide should be a criminal offence.
It is culture, religion, and the community perception. They don't see mental health as a medical issue. They see it as a spiritual issue, either witchcraft or a curse. And for myself, they have called so many religious leaders to pray for me. They even took me to the witches in order to reverse the bipolar disorder that I have. So it is something that is perceived as odd.
And so are there repercussions for families of people who have been found guilty of attempted suicide?
Yeah, they say that family was cursed. They were cursed by their ancestors. And therefore, it is not a good family. You should not get married to that family. You should not mingle with that family.
And that stigma often sees families lashing out directly at their loved ones. Mental health campaigner Charity Maturi.
We've had family members beating up people because they are angry after they attempt suicide, that they are taking their life for granted. The assumption that people have is that being a crime, it is that it's the police who rush to arrest this person. But in reality, it's usually the families and communities that call the police.
Jackie also lives in Kenya. Her son died by suicide when he was 20 in 2019. There was no real explanation, but she thinks he may have been suffering from mental health issues. She's found many people blame her for what happened.
They perceive as a failed mother, or that somehow you caused it, or it was your fault, you did something that must have caused him to go that direction. And they blame you for his death, not understanding that it was actually a mental condition. I took a lot of flack. And then the difficulty in speaking and talking about suicide around you, especially family members, they don't know how to process it.
If having your son die by suicide wasn't enough, Jackie then faced prejudice when it came to his funeral.
There's a sense of neglect, and they're not accorded the normal dignity that other people with just a normal burial are accorded. You're told, don't cry. You're not supposed to cry for somebody who's taken his own life. He made his own decision. Because of the stigma associated with suicide, the funeral will be very quiet, as opposed to a funeral where they will honor the person who has passed away, whether it was a person who has died with cancer or was ill or an accident. There is less pomp and color. The most hurtful thing was, first of all, the fact that they took the cross and they faced the cross outside. I said, why aren't they facing the cross inside? You know, facing his name, so that when you're standing at the feet and you're looking inside, you'd be able to see his name and, you know, just the details that are normally on the cross. But they refused it. They said that's what they usually do here for people who have taken their own lives. I removed the cross and I faced it the right way, just for my own mental stability and comfort.
So as a mum who's lost a son in this way, how does it make you feel?
It's deeply hurting, because I also don't know the history behind the person taking his life away. Thereafter, I also hit depression because of the entire situation. I didn't come out of the house for almost a year. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything. I just stopped functioning.
And I gather that your experience is pretty common.
So many people, but they don't speak about it. If you went to the morgue, when I was collecting my son, we collected him very early in the morning, but the parents that were there are so many. And the morgue attendant was telling me, do you see that boy? That's a similar case. Did you see that girl? Do you see that baby? Do you see that woman? Do you see that man? It's rampant.
So what is the actual suicide rate in Kenya? Well, it's acknowledged that due to stigma and criminalisation, there is likely to be an underreporting of incidents. But according to the most recent World Health Organization figures, Kenya has a suicide rate of 11 in every 100,000, which translates to roughly 4 suicide deaths a day. For every 1 suicide globally, it's estimated there are 20 more attempts. It is one of the biggest causes of death among young people around the world, and Kenya is no different.
My name is Charity Muturi. I do global and national health policy and advocacy. So I served in the National Task Force on Mental Health, I sit in the Global Advisory Committee, Non-Communicable Disease Alliance, and currently I am a court petitioner to decriminalize suicide attempt in Kenya.
Legislative efforts to replace punitive measures with counselling and community service in Kenya have faced multiple challenges. But the Ministry of Health has launched a 5-year-long suicide prevention strategy, and Charity, who is advising government and other organisations, is trying to get a change in the law, but says it's a slow process.
I work with, closely with the criminal justice system and with religious leaders. So usually the conversations we have with them are very heated. They see this as a sin, and that government having it as a law is to defend that it shouldn't be done. And so you find there are religious leaders who don't want to be involved with it. People are opening up more to the conversation, and I find they're more open to mental health generally, but with suicide, they'd rather not talk about it. I spoke to many policemen, probation officers, prison officers, and for many of them, they felt that this law, because when someone knows that they will be caught, or when someone is caught and they see the shame of being taken to a police station, that it actually saves lives. Even parliament, there's a parliamentarian who asked me, Charity, why do you want to have me give people permission to die? So there's just that general outlook on suicide that it is religiously wrong, it is culturally wrong, and so the law should support that.
But Charity and her team are finding that views in Kenya are gradually evolving.
It is very different where I have dealt with people who have actually witnessed what suicide does to a family. And so you find, if it's religious leaders, I had reached out to 25 of them. So 21 of them said no, they don't want to be involved. But 4 of them said yes, because they have buried congregants to suicide and they saw the impact that it had on those families. So that's why I have been choosing to go about this through religious leaders, because, you know, for most people, if they can see that a religious leader is actually saying, no, we need to talk about this, whether it's a sin or not, doesn't matter. It's a health issue. And the same way we support people with diabetes, we will support people with mental health conditions.
Charity, Jackie and Gabriel's experiences in Kenya are mirrored in several other countries in Africa. Uganda, Nigeria, where children as young as 8 can be punished. Gambia, South Sudan and Tanzania. And Charles Masoamari is Chief Executive Officer for one of the church-run mental health service providers based in the Southeast African country of Malawi.
The Penal Code 228 in Malawi criminalizes attempting suicide, but also Penal Code 229 criminalizes aiding suicide. The belief that is there is that if somebody attempts to die by suicide, is likened to somebody that has probably killed a person or was having an intention to kill somebody. And even in most of the churches in Malawi, they deny funeral rites to those that died by suicide.
Police records show that suicide cases have been increasing in Malawi since 2018. In 2023, the rate was running at 11.6 per 100,000 people, higher than the global average of 10.5. And Charles says the figures are probably just the tip of the iceberg.
Because suicide is still criminalized on the penal code, there are a number of suicide that are not reported, or there are also a lot of attempts that are not reported. If somebody dies and the suicide was not reported, even the family members could face the consequences of not having reported. So, if somebody dies by suicide or he attempts suicide, the people tend to hide.
And if you're caught, the full weight of the law can be crushing.
While we talk about people being sent to prison so that they can be reformed, prison systems in Malawi, just like in most of the developing world, is more of a punishment.
So if someone goes to prison for, I gather, I think it's a couple of years, isn't it? 2 years for attempted suicide. What kind of life can they actually expect in a jail in Malawi?
You will be kept like any other prisoner. There might be severe criminals that people who attempt suicide will stay together with, and they will operate under the same conditions. So they might be involved in hard labor. One would be very, very lucky if he would have a proper psychological assessment or have access to a counselor. If one ended up in prison, it would exacerbate their stress. You'd be sleeping in a hugely overcrowded area without proper washroom facilities, and in most cases, maybe having a single meal per day.
So why do you think that the law criminalising attempted suicide prevails in Malawi then? I know there have been calls for a change recently in the law, but what's the thinking behind it from those people who do support the existing law?
Suicide is considered as a cowardice escape. So it's like people are running away from their own personal med problems. The other cultural belief, it is passing from families, or maybe the family is cursed. These are some of the societal beliefs and myths, but also it's a religious thing as well, because people are saying, if people kill themselves and they have committed a great sin.
You're listening to Suicide Silent Survivors from the BBC World Service.
Der Disney Plus Serientipp.
Hey, hier spricht Meredith Grey, direkt aus dem Grey Sloan Memorial Hospital. Wir suchen Verstärkung, denn hier kommen viele neue Fälle rein. Unsere Station ist voll mit außergewöhnlichen Patienten, jungen Ärzten in Ausbildung und viel zwischenmenschlichem Drama. Also schau schnell vorbei.
Grey's Anatomy, die neuen Folgen und alle Staffeln nur auf Disney Plus streamen. Abo schon ab 5,99 € pro Monat. Und nun viel Spaß beim Podcast, wünscht Disney Plus.
In the mid-2000s, there was a wellness trend that was all the rage. It was called the alkaline diet, and it was pioneered by Dr. Robert Young.
Breakfast should start out with a fresh juice.
But he didn't just promise weight loss, he promised a miracle cure.
She was desperate. She wanted to feel better.
Everyone's dying. Why is everyone dying?
From Campside Media, Dorothy Street Pictures, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Dr. Miracle. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Another country where attempting suicide is punishable is Bangladesh. Anyone who tries to take their own life can be sentenced to a year behind bars and a fine. Professor Kamal Chowdhury is a clinical psychologist based at the University of Dhaka. He says there are two laws which cover suicide. One focuses on the individual and the other on anyone with knowledge of their actions.
Whoever abets the commission of such suicide shall be punished with jail term for up to 10 years and can be fined. So both laws clearly stated that suicide is a criminal act, and people who abet or influence the person also can be charged with the criminal act.
Kamal says society's thinking around suicide is greatly influenced by religious, social and cultural values.
In Islamic religion and other religions, suicide is considered a great sin. So the view is he is doing some religious crime, as well as from the legal issue, it's a crime.
So we've been hearing from other countries where people might suffer reprisals, sometimes being people being beaten up in their community. Is that something that is common in Bangladesh?
People, they're not that much stigmatized. More focus is on the family. They're saying you could not handle your family member well. You should have looked after him.
While the stigma is strong for families, Kamal says the full force of the law in Bangladesh is rarely enforced on the individual who's tried to take their own life.
Most cases, they're being hospitalized, they got the treatment, police comes, then it's very minor. It's like a slap on the wrist that you wanted to do something bad, but you're lucky, just get on, get back to your life. They are viewed as a broken person.
So is there anywhere for them to go to seek support from mental health professionals like yourself?
Mental health has been talked about in educated class, but if you look at the bigger picture, it's not the same. research done by National Institute of Mental Health reported people who are affected in the community, who are having some sort of mental health problem, they do not visit mental health professional. Where do they go? They visit the local shaman and local religious healers, unscientific approaches. The problem is still there because we do not have enough mental health professionals in the country to address the needs. We have about 170 million people. We only have about 350 psychiatrists who have a medical degree. So still the number is very few, considering we have about nearly 16% of the population suffering from mental health problems.
And how does that make you feel?
If you ask for my feeling, I feel sometimes helpless. We could not save all those people. This year, it will be the same, more than 10,000 people. And the next year, it will be like that. Unless we take some drastic measure, we take some real initiative, it's not going to change.
So you feel a change in the law is vital, even though it's not necessarily always enforced, because there's that sort of threat there that you're being criminalised. Has there been any progress in attempting to repeal criminalisation in Bangladesh?
Some leading psychiatrists in the country, they have started talking. Then a report came out to decriminalise suicide. There's a talk going on in our level. Even I have shared in a number of occasions. But unfortunately, we haven't made much progress and there's not much visible activity because government is too busy with other many issues.
Amar is from Accra, Ghana's capital. She's attempted to take her own life multiple times. Amar isn't her real name, and we've also changed her voice to protect her safety. Amar is currently completing her national service and has been through a lot, but she's now looking forward and hoping to set up her own business. She first tried to take her own life when she was just a girl.
When they found me, I was beaten up because my mom's worry was what people were going to talk about her. She didn't take care of her child. Nobody has asked me the reason why I did that. The only thing that was done was I was beaten up. I remember them calling me even a witch because, like, I'm going to disgrace the family or something. And that was it. And through that, it was... I'm sorry.
And Amar says stigma caused by a long-term law criminalising the act in the country hasn't helped. Until recently, you could also be jailed and fined in Ghana for attempting to take your own life. But that law has now gone. Ghana is one of a handful of countries which has recently decriminalised attempted suicide.
Removing that law, I think, is a step in the right direction. So right now, I don't have to go to jail anymore. It is better than nothing at all. There is no fear. That fear and anger towards the law isn't there anymore.
But Amar says the stigma prevails in Ghana, as well as a belief that you should be resilient regardless of what you're going through and put your faith in religion.
So people want to see you strong and show up, but nobody really wants to help you be strong. I'm a Christian and I believe in God, but sometimes I feel like we over-spiritualize everything and put a religious tag on everything. Social support and being able to be there for people helps more than praying to God, because God will not come and put his arms around you and hug you and hold your hand when you're having anxiety and tell you everything will be fine. But people just want you to pray to God and forget your problems. I remember a friend of mine also did it, and when the pictures were put on one of our pages, I remember somebody coming to put a long Bible quotation and saying Jesus was calling on you and you didn't answer and now you killed yourself. Like, Jesus wouldn't have come to help the person if the person was going through probably a financial crisis. And I told the person point blank that if this person had come to even tell you, oh, I'm hungry or I'm going through this and I needed help, you'd probably push the person away and tell the person you couldn't help, even though you might have been able to help. These are some of the challenges.
Another country that has changed the law is Guyana in South America. Guyana once had one of the world's highest rates of suicide. Supriya Singh Bodhan is founder of the Guyana Foundation, which offers counselling to vulnerable people in the country. She says it's too early to tell whether decriminalisation will lead to more people coming forward for help.
really and truly, we don't know how many suicides have gone unaccounted for, because clearly if it was a criminal act, it's not something that people would want to be publicized. So over the years, there's been a lot of deaths by suicide. It has touched so many families. Just about every village you go into, you could probably find somebody who's taken their life by suicide. So yes, the entire country is cognizant of the fact that we have to deal with this matter, even though they don't want to speak out in public, etc. People are hurting because many of them have lost relatives, friends, or co-workers to suicide.
Guyana's suicide prevention bill in 2022 repealed the law that made suicide a criminal offence, replacing it with a national suicide prevention plan. Now Guyana is in the process of establishing centres throughout the country to reduce suicide attempts. Meanwhile, in December 2022, Section 325 of the Pakistan Penal Code decriminalised suicide there, and in June 2023, Malaysia followed suit. Dr. Sahar Sabri helped to lead the campaign to decriminalise suicide in Pakistan over many years.
There had earlier been an attempt, this was in 2017, and the primary reasons for its failure, the religious lobby's sort of apprehensions that if someone has mental illness, then they should not be criminalised. But if someone does not have mental illness, then they should be so. But thing is, how do you operationalise that? How do you make a quick assessment? Okay, fine, this is mental illness, this is not, let's put this one in jail and this one. It was really impractical.
And Dr. Sabir says there were similar hurdles to overcome in their second attempt to change the law.
So then we worked with the religious stakeholders. We got religious rulings that suicide, even though suicide is a sin, it should not be criminalized. Its criminalization is un-Islamic. We got religious rulings on that. So bill passed in the Senate, and then we got the bill passed in the National Assembly as well.
Those of us whose loved ones have tried to take their own lives often talk about living with suicide. Once it's happened, it never really leaves you. However much your partner, relative or friend recovers from their breakdown, the initial shock makes you think it could happen again at any time. In countries where that experience can be compounded through criminalisation, public beatings and long-term stigma, that fear is much greater. People who try to take their own lives need compassion. The World Health Organization says decriminalization in several countries is a huge step forward. But changing the law is only part of the process. It's going to take much longer to alter some deep-rooted beliefs. But where compassionate intervention does succeed, the rewards are overwhelming.
Someone who attempted suicide and survived and came to us in a pretty broken state and worked and learned a skill. She seemed to have a real talent at this particular skill she got. And we then turned around and said to her, would you consider teaching a course for us to people, to some students? And she agreed. And the first day I was at her class and she told the students what she went through and so on. And it was amazing to see the floodgates open because she connected with at least seven people in that group who were at risk. And so here she was trying to help them. And that class turned out to be really successful. Those things warm your heart because you saw that life slipping away, and then to see that life saved and productive, that makes every single thing we do worthwhile.
Suicide's Silent Survivors was presented and produced by me, Ashley Byrne. It was a Made in Manchester production for the BBC World Service.
In the mid-2000s, there was a wellness trend that was all the rage. It was called the alkaline diet, and it was pioneered by Dr. Robert Young.
Breakfast should start out with a fresh juice.
But he didn't just promise weight loss. He promised a miracle cure.
She was desperate. She wanted to feel better.
Everyone's dying. Why is everyone dying?
From Campside Media, Dorothy Street Pictures, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Dr. Miracle. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.